Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to a live edition of your award-winning radio magazine. Our guest says her rebellion brought her into immorality, and now she says she has a life worth living. Joining us by phone is Kathy Fowler. Welcome to you, Kathy.
Hi.
Hey, it's great to have you with us. And we remind our listeners that their comments and questions for our guest are always timely. Kathy, you still having fun?
I am having much more fun than I ever was then.
Is life supposed to, but some might say to you, Kathy, life isn't supposed to be about fun, is it?
You know, I guess not. Yeah, well, I don't know. My life now is fun. What I used to think was fun and what I used to waste my time doing, I thought was fun, but now it is fun, and it's not easy by any means, but it's definitely fun. You know, I'm raising my children and being a hate to my husband, and these are the things that are fun for me now.
Yeah. You know, as I prepared for this interview, I was looking at your brochure, then under your previous name, Luther, the Kathy Luther story, and it shows a young woman, you, throwing up in a toilet. Is that you?
Actually, no, that's a stock photo, but it might as well have been because I spent many, many hours doing that very thing.
So I guess the question that some people would say, well, why don't you keep doing it? Throwing up into a toilet isn't any fun.
You know, when it all started, and I'd have to say maybe the first time you think it's fun, and it doesn't take long before it's not fun anymore, but it just has kind of a, not kind of, it absolutely gets a hold on you. And I don't know, you just tell yourself, fall into these lies and tell yourself these lies, and so you're always seeking that point when you thought it was fun, and it's really not fun. It really just gets to be more and more miserable.
What kind of lies did you tell yourself?
The big one I think I told myself was that I was only hurting myself. You know, I believe lies about myself, that I was never going to be anything but a drug addict, and my life was never going to be any better. But then I started to tell myself the lie that, you know, you're only hurting yourself. No one else is being affected by this. At the time, I didn't have any kids, and I lived on my own, and so that was probably one of the biggest lies I would tell myself.
You started rebelling at an early age. You say in your brochure, no dad in your life to give you attention. So what happened? What were the seeds? How did it all start?
Well, you know, my parents had a tumultuous marriage that ended when I was very young, and my dad had problems of his own. You know, he was an addict and an alcoholic, and I think that, and I always thought this, I think that he wanted to be there for his kids, but he was just trapped in it as well, you know. My mom had issues along the same lines, and so it was just, you know, I give them credit. They did, you know, the best they could with what they had. I'm sure they had, their parents didn't necessarily raise them the best either. But I think it's important, you know, I think it's really important. I think kids need that in their lives. They need the love of parents. They need the love, you know, kids need a dad. And, it's, you know, they say little boys need a dad. Well, unfortunately, mm-hmm. I think that it's very important for little girls, too, because if we don't get that, then it's not long before we start to look for that attention from wherever it will come from, you know.
How old were you when your dad wasn't there anymore?
Oh, you know, I don't even remember. I was a very young child. I would say age 3, 4 maybe. And then it was just throughout my childhood, just sporadic times, you know, just every once in a while. I mean, he would call sometimes, but.
Sure. And was he sober when he called?
Usually not, I don't think, no. I mean, he was when he would call, and then he would make plans, you know, I want to come and get you guys. I want to take you camping. I want to go do this, but I don't know what would happen in between the phone call and the appointed time, but those things never really came to fruition. So It did a lot of damage, I think. You don't realize it then, but I see now, and I see in my own kids how they just hunger for that, you know. They need it.
Mm-hmm. I bet there was a time in your life, Kathy, that when you were in addiction, that you probably blamed your father for that, because you said, well, it's the genes. It's handed down through our family that my father had it, so I have it. Because addicts make excuses, don't they?
We do. We absolutely do. And I went through a period of that. When I was in my addiction, that's one of the things I did to kind of make myself feel better about it. Well, that's what my parents did. That's what I did, you know. But I don't now, I think that's a bad road to go down, because it's hard to come out from that. It's not until you can start accepting the blame for the choices that you make that you can really get any kind of victory over it, you know?
You're saying go ahead.
I mean, I'm always going to have the same childhood, but if I'm going to let that be what defeats me and keeps me on drugs and keeps me defeated, then I'm never going to be able to come above that. It's not until I can realize I'm an adult and I'm making decisions for myself, and I'm responsible for the decisions that I make, and that's the only time you really can clean it up and get your act together.
You say in your brochure, with a little makeup and my sister's ID, I found that I could get more attention from older men at nightclubs. I was pretty. They didn't seem to care about my age. I became fascinated with the nightlife at age 17. You say you began bartending, so you slept every day and partied every night. You were really on the downward path of a roller coaster. Nothing ever occurred to you during this time as you were being used by other people?
It started when I was young, and so you just you don't realize. I mean, I don't remember at what point I actually realized, you know. I mean, it's one thing when you're 17 to be living this party life. It's another thing when you're 27 to still be doing it and not have any direction in your life. So, like it says in there, you know, you just go through so many tomorrows until you finally one day realize that, you know, it's going nowhere. You're not young. You're not 17 anymore. Like, it's time to do something to get it together. You know, there's whatever I was looking for. It was time to really seek something and try to figure out what it was going to take to get me out of that mess.
That's a good observation, Kathy, running out of tomorrows. So, was there a specific point you can look back or think back to that, you know, I've used everything up on my timesheet. I need to do something different. Was there a specific incident that made you turn your life around?
Yeah, there was. I got pregnant, and, you know, it wasn't my first pregnancy. I'm absolutely ashamed to say I had been pregnant 3 times, and I had even told myself the lie that I could just go ahead and end those pregnancies. There's nothing, you know, my life's in no condition to have a kid, and I would be a horrible mom. But my fourth pregnancy, I got pregnant, and I don't know what it was. Something inside of me, I didn't want to do that again, and I just didn't want to just keep going on like that. And so my parents put me into a rehab where I got clean while I was pregnant, and I stayed clean while I was pregnant, but it was having a little baby girl, you know. Like I said, I'd always tell myself, well, you're only hurting yourself. Well, all of a sudden, here I am, and I've got this little tiny, precious baby girl, and I'm still blowing it, and I'm still making these mistakes. And I remember thinking, okay, your parents were this way, and you've been this way, and if you don't do something right now, then she's going to end up going down the same roads.
So, the two questions. First, do you say your parents, so your mother and father, though they were divorced, got together to put you into rehab?
My mother and my stepfather did.
Okay. So with the first 3 births, what, abortions took care of that?
Yes.
And, you know, life is a roller coaster ride. And you had the birth of your daughter, Leanna. And, you know, when the first time you saw her, you know, just after the birth, what did you think about where your life was going, and did you want to take this child along?
You know, the first you see them, it changes you.
Yeah.
And I stayed clean for the first couple of months after I had her, and so I didn't think, you know, I thought, well, I'm doing pretty good here, I'm still clean, and she was, I don't know, maybe a month and a half or 2 months old when I fell, and you know, I'd always been the party girl, and I'd always been able to, I guess you always have a conscience, but mine was awful quiet for a long time there, but this time, now it was different.
Yeah.
I wasn't hurting myself, just myself anymore. I wasn't responsible for just myself. I mean, the guilt and just the misery was multiplied at this point.
I have to believe you were getting phone calls or people were coming up to you and say, hey, Kathy, when are you going to return to party? We miss you.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. That kind of life always, there's always something there to draw you back in. You know, it's funny, there's, if you let it, if you're not careful, you have to always be careful, and you can't just sit back and expect to just wander through life, especially when you've lived that way, and just make it through okay, because there's something waiting around the corner. You know, you have to take a proactive stance on it. You have to be aware that any little thing can trip you up.
I understand that, as you started to relapse, you were feeling desperate and you pulled out the Bible, but you closed it somewhat in frustration because you didn't understand anything. Tell us about that experience.
Well, I didn't grow up in church. No one had ever told me about God or anything like that. I guess maybe deep down I thought that there was, and toward the end of my addiction, when those kind of thoughts would come over me, I would think, well, if there really is a God, then he'll forgive me for all of this. And so I remembered a few years back, the only person that I'd ever known of that had been an addict and gotten clean, quote-unquote, found religion. And so I thought, I'm going to try. I don't know what else to do. I was sitting in my apartment one day. My baby girl was across the room sleeping, and it was quiet. And I was high, and I had been getting high for a few days, and I was absolutely miserable and guilt-ridden. And then I pulled out this Bible, and I opened it up, and I started to read it. And I didn't understand any of it. It didn't make any sense. You know, I was expecting to read a book about God, and it was about God, but the part that I was reading, it just didn't make sense to me. And so I closed it, and I just started crying. I just thought, well, that's it, you know, because I guess in the back of my head I'd always thought, well, if you ever really decide that you're going to get out of it, then there's always this to try. And so I thought, well, that's it. Then that's not even that work for me.
Yeah, and then there was two guys knocked on your door the same time?
Right then, actually. When I opened my door, I think I was still, they had told me later that when I opened the door, I was still in.
Yeah. And of course, I don't believe necessarily in coincidence. I think things happen for a reason. Part of the time, we don't understand that reason. But, it was just, I won't call it a miracle, but did they ever tell you why they stopped by your door?
You know, it's funny. They were from a church in town, and they were out soul winning. They were out knocking on people's doors to tell them about the Lord. And one of the men lived across the street from my apartment, and they weren't soul winning in my neighborhood. They had stopped. He had forgotten something at his apartment, and he had stopped home to get that, and just something in him told him to go knock on that door. And that was my door.
Okay. We got to take a break, Kathy. Don't go anywhere. We'll be back with more on Voices of the Tri-States in just a moment. Welcome back. We are live on the phone with Kathy Fowler talking about her travel back from addiction. By the way, the phone numbers are 690-1370 or 1-800-422-KDTH. Kathy, there's stories all the time of people who reach out to God, but they seem to reach out when, they're in trouble. Charles Colson of the Watergate infamy, Ted Haggard engaging in sin against his family and his congregation. And sometimes people question their sincerity. How about you? Anybody say, oh, that Kathy Fowler, she'll fall back?
It's funny. There were a few naysayers along the way, and I remember one man told me that lots of people get into religion and they swing all the way over to the right, but eventually they come back a little bit. But, there was no denying the change that was being done in me, and so it wasn't even tempting.
You were going to, these two guys knocked on the door, told you about that, gave you a brochure. You decided to attend the church, and a couple Sundays later, you accepted Christ as your Savior. Boy, things were moving kind of fast. What was going on in you at this time? Did you see that this was the door that was opening to you and it might not open again?
Things were moving very fast. But like you said, you know, I don't know that I necessarily believed one way or another on coincidences, but when I sat in my living room and opened that Bible, which was one of the first times I'd ever done anything like that, and within minutes there were men standing at my door inviting me to their church, I knew that there was had to be something to that. Now, I did go. I went to their church. I got saved, praise the Lord, and it didn't change me right away. I mean, I attended church faithfully. I was there. Every time the doors were open, I was there. And every time that that preacher would give his messages, they would speak to my heart. But I didn't know how to go home and stop getting high. It had just become such a huge part of my life. You know, I just didn't know anything else. And so I just kept going and going. I kept thinking, one of these times I'm going to go in there, and he's going to say something, and that's going to be it. Something's going to change in me, and I'm not ever going to want to do this again.
You sat down. Go ahead.
Sorry, go ahead.
You sat down for a time with the pastor and his wife and just opened up?
I was reading one day in my Bible. Actually, it was one night. It was the middle of the night. And I was reading in my Bible, and I read a verse in there that said that only the truth was going to make me free. And I thought, well, maybe that's it. Maybe it's because I'm going to this church, and I'm going in there, and I enjoy it, and I'm listening to the preaching, and it's speaking to me, but maybe it's because I'm not being honest. I mean, I had never been the kind of person that would ever tell somebody, listen, I have a drug problem. And so I finally, I thought, I'll try it. And so I told my preacher and his wife what was really going on with me. And they said that they had an idea. They knew something was wrong, but they had never known anybody that was on meth before. And so they couldn't really put their finger on it. But that's when they started to look for a biblical solution to my problem.
You know, recovery is a series of steps. So, all right, you went to church, you got saved, talked with the pastor and his wife. But now there are some more steps. You have to get really into a more active recovery program. What did you do?
Well, at the time, I was living there in Dubuque. And there are some addiction programs around that area. And I had tried some of those, and they did not work for me. And so my pastor and his wife started to look on the internet for some other programs. They knew that I needed to get out of that area. That was a big part of my problem. You know, like you said, there's always somebody that's trying to woo you back into that mm-hmm. lifestyle. Somebody, you know, even you don't necessarily have to be out looking for it. It will come and find you. And so they knew that I needed to be up and just removed from that and put in a safer place where that wasn't always lurking around the corner, if you will.
Mm-hmm. So what'd you do?
They found a program called Reformers Unanimous in Rockford, Illinois, and this program had just recently started. They had had a men's home for a number of years, but they had just recently started a ladies' home, and it was an inpatient treatment program, but it was 6 months long, and you actually came and lived in this home for 6 months. Now, I had a little baby. I had a 9-month-old baby girl, and I applied for the program, and after I applied, I would call and call and call, and I didn't learn until later, but the director of these homes got my application, but he had seen that I had a baby, and the program wasn't set up to take women that had kids. It was only set up just to take women, and so he had told me later that even though I was calling on a daily basis, sometimes multiple times a day, mm-hmm. trying to get him on the phone to find out whether or not he would let me come. I did speak to him once, and I told him I had a baby, and he said, what will you do with her when you come? And I said, I have to bring her. What's the point? What's the point of me coming and getting my life together and leaving her behind in some mess, you know? And so he told me later that he kept saying no, 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 and God kept saying yes, 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 and he finally submitted to that, and they accepted Leanna and I to come into their program.
And now you continue to work at the Ladies Residential Treatment Program in Rockford?
I worked there for a number of years. I actually worked there. I met my husband. He also worked there, and we got married. and we had a little boy in March of 08. And so the last day of February of 2008 was my last day working because I stay at home now. Okay. I've actually got another little baby girl that's just 8 months old.
Okay. You say in your brochure, though, the glamour of my former lifestyle has long since faded. It had not released me from its grip. Do you still feel that grip?
No. No, I don't anymore. I feel like I've got absolute victory in over all of my addictions. You know, I mean, I was a smoker and a drinker and a methamphetamine. There was just all of those things. I've got victory over all of those things.
Now, all right. In recovering from addiction, did you try to knock three of them off at one time, or did you kind of, like, take meth first and then alcohol and then tobacco? How did you do that?
I quit everything. When I came to Rockford, my last day in Dubuque was my last day of ever using. It was actually September. My first day here in Rockford was September 5th in 2004, and that was the last time I touched any of it.
You know, that's a pretty dramatic. You ever lose track of the many times you were tempted to go back on at least one of them?
No, I honestly believe that God gave me the grace to. It was funny, when I first came in the home, I would tell the ladies, listen, because I had tried to give up getting high a number of times, and it just seemed like I could never get over this hump. You know, it would be like a couple of days of just really anyway, I could never get over this hump. And so I thought I was going to come to Rockford, and I was going to be here for a day or two, and there was going to come this hump again that I could never seem to get over before. And I would warn the other ladies that were in the home around me, listen, that one of these, you know, maybe it's not going to be today, maybe there's still something in my system, but tomorrow I'm going to get up, and it's going to be rough, and I'm going to be grumpy, and I'm going to be irritable, but that day never came. So I feel like God just gave me the grace and set me down easy for stepping out in obedience. And
Did you have any mentor at that time while you were at the home, a person who took particular interest in your care?
There was the woman who ran the ladies' home here. Her name was Lisa, and I'd never known any kind of structure like this. It's a very structured home. You know, you're expected to get up early in the morning. You do your devotions. You spend your time with God. Then you go off and work a job for 8 hours that day. Then you come home, and there are, you know, you go to chapel, there are chores. It's a very structured environment, and I had never known any kind of structure like that. So, you know, to say it lightly, I was a pretty tough individual to break and get into that habit. But Lisa was very gentle with me, and she helped me. You know, I had Leanna with me, so I wasn't just, whereas most of these women would come into the home and they would have to go through this process of getting clean, I had to go through a process of getting clean while being a mom at the same time. She was very, very helpful in all of that for me.
We have about a minute, Kathy. What are you going to do when your children start to rebel when they reach that age that you reached? What are you going to do?
Well, you know, I'm going to be here for them, and I'm going to fight that battle for them on my knees in prayer. My prayer and what I spend all day, every day doing now is to teach them about better things in life, to teach them about the Lord, and teach them about how much He loves them. And because I know that was the void that was missing in my younger years. When I started with immorality, I just wanted to be loved. I wanted someone to love me. And I'm trying to give my children that love now, so it's not something that they're starving for when they become young adults.
If someone is listening who is starting the trail that you've already been on, what advice do you have for them?
It's not easy, but it's so worth it. Get on it, stick with it, you know, just keep looking forward, keep looking up, just look to the Lord, He'll get you through all of it. Just don't give up. Don't give up. It's a big thing. You just can't give up. And if you do mess up, if there is a period of time where you make a mistake and you do stumble, get back up. Don't throw the towel in ever. Just keep moving forward. You just have to, a woman gave a testimony at ours the other night, and she made a statement. She said, just do the next right thing. Mm-hmm. And it's really that simple. You just got to, you know, you don't have to think ahead of what's next week and next month and next year. It's just whatever the next right thing is, just that next right thing.
Kathy, I really appreciate your courage in talking with us. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you so much.
Bye-bye. Our guest has been Kathy Fowler, who has traveled back from serious addictions, now a mother of three children.